This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Ohio Governor John Kasich picked up his first win in the Republican presidential primaries, beating Donald Trump yesterday to take Ohio's 66 delegates and increasing the chances of a contested GOP convention. Hillary Clinton won Ohio's Democratic primary, and joining me to review yesterday's results and look at what might be in store for Governor Kasich between now and November, Ohio Public Radio and Television Statehouse News Bureau Chief Karen Kassler and WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Karen and Howard, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you.
Great to be here. Thanks.
Hi, Karen.
How are you?
We're doing great. Are you recovering from last night?
I am fueled entirely by caffeine at this point, I almost can't be responsible for what I say.
I'm eating 10 million chocolate chip cookies.
That's sugar and caffeine.
Right,
nice choice.
Exactly.
Late night for both of you. And wow, Karen, that was a lot of confetti last night that got dumped on Governor Kasich.
I'm sure the cleanup crews were quite busy today trying to get all that swept up. Yeah,
they might have actually had a later night than you
confetti.
Did. Yeah. So, Karen and Howard, what does yesterday's win in Ohio do for Governor Kasich's campaign? Karen?
Well, I think, you know, it keeps it alive, essentially. I mean, he had said that if he had lost Ohio, it was ball game over. He was out. And so he really needed to win Ohio. I mean, there was a reason that he spent this whole weekend previous in Ohio. There was a reason that he was on the air blasting back at Donald Trump and TV ads. I mean, he really, really needed to win Ohio because it was a winner-take-all state, 66 delegates. There was no second place in Ohio this time. And so he really, he needed a win, definitely. This is his first win now, and for Marco Rubio to be out of the race after losing Florida, it really does make this a three-person race, and that kind of could potentially change the whole character of what we have going forward into the convention.
Yes, absolutely. And now, having won Ohio, we have 19 more primaries to go, or states to go. He's got to win more. He needs to win
more. Yeah, I think that's yeah. And I think, you know, now that there are only three, I mean, we started out with 17.
Right.
Remember that?
Yep.
And now that we're down to three, arguably he will get more attention. He will get more coverage. Even when there were four, he was getting largely ignored in some respects by national media coverage. When you have limited resources, you cover the three people that you think are going to be the front runners. And he was just not considered to be one of those, apparently. Now there's only three.
Yeah.
So he's going to start getting attention and coverage.
It's going to be interesting to see. Just over the next few days, some of the polling in the upcoming states and the national polling to see what impact that's had on Kasich's standing, because his standing nationally was very low.
Yes.
Prior to this, and you know whether or not this has raised his profile nationally, and people are starting to look at him as a legitimate presidential nominee. That's going to be very interesting.
So is he looking at this as a battle of attrition? I could be the last man standing or the next to guy standing?
Yeah. It is.
Go ahead.
Well, the one thing that strikes me, I mean, I don't know what's going to happen over the, you know, these next 19 states, obviously. I think he does have to win some of them. He's already on the ground in Pennsylvania and other places. But, you know, you got to remember that if they stop Donald Trump short of the 1,237 delegates that he needs, after these primaries are over, there's 40 days between the end of the primaries and the day that the convention convenes in Cleveland. And that could be a very important period of time in terms of trying to work out a deal that would, you know, prevent Donald Trump from winning the nomination, which is what the Republican establishment wants. They don't like Cruz. They don't like Trump. They could certainly live with a John Kasich.
Well, speaking of this establishment, you had Mitt Romney campaigning in Ohio with John Kasich. Yeah.
To what effect, I don't know, but yes, he was.
Now, and I think that, that kind of leads in, though, to some of the folks who have deliberately rejected John Kasich, as mm-hmm. they rejected Jeb Bush and Chris Christie and Marco Rubio, this whole idea of the establishment candidate. Now, it's funny, when you ask Kasich about that, he says he's not an establishment candidate. But clearly, he is an establishment candidate in the sense that he's been in Washington, he's been a government official, he is currently a sitting governor. He does have an establishment resume. And so, for folks who are drawn to Donald Trump, Mitt Romney is not somebody who would convince them to go over to John Kasich.
Yeah, this year in Republican primary politics, being the establishment guy is really not an ideal situation.
Exactly.
They're not, you know, they're not really looking for an establishment guy who has, you know, been on the inside and you know, has the long resume.
Yeah, but Kasich has said that he's going to go all the way to Cleveland and secure the Republican nomination. So as you two have pointed out, he sounds like he's in this to stay. It also sounds like he is hoping that you get a contested or a brokered convention at this point.
Well, that's his only hope. I mean, mm-hmm. he cannot win outright.
Right.
He'd have to win more than the number of delegates that are still available.
Yeah, there's only 1,000
the
left out there.
Yeah. And so he before to go into the convention with the nomination in hand, John Kasich can't do it with the delegates that remain. Now the question is, can they stop between him and Ted Cruz? Can they stop Donald Trump from doing that? Trump is halfway there. And so that's where this three-man race really becomes very critical.
And that, I think, is a really narrow window. It's going to be, you know, it's possible they can stop him. But, you know, I still think Trump has the advantage there.
And at what cost if they stop him, though? I mean,
right.
Absolutely. The establishment, you got people like Mitt Romney and other folks. So you've got people in, here in Ohio, Auditor David Yost, some other people who were saying they would not campaign or vote for Donald Trump.
Right.
But certainly you've got many, many people across the country who have supported Donald Trump, campaigned for him, voted for him. They would be furious if indeed the candidate who came into the convention with the most number of delegates, if not the number to clinch, was not the candidate who becomes the nominee.
I guarantee you, if Donald Trump comes very close to the number that he needs and ends up not getting the nomination, those people who voted for him in the primaries are gone.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
They will have no interest whatsoever in a John Kasich or Ted Cruz or anybody else.
And in the part of the state where you folks are in Southwest Ohio, there are a lot of folks who really supported Donald Trump and really had some very serious concerns about Kasich. They've been concerned about Common Core. They've been concerned about the Affordable Care Act and the expansion of Medicaid here in Ohio. And these are people that John Kasich has had trouble convincing to come over to his side. So sure, I mean, Donald Trump picked coming to Dayton and Cincinnati over the weekend for a reason. And he picked Youngstown for a reason. He's done very well in areas where unemployment is high.
He won that district.
He did.
Yeah.
And it's a Democratic district, but he has been winning districts that have higher unemployment.
And he won Ted Strickland's old district that runs up the Ohio River through southeast Ohio.
Well, we'll talk about that some more, Howard. I mean, what areas of Ohio did Kasich do well in? What areas of Ohio did Trump do well in?
Oh, well, I mean, Trump only won two congressional districts out of the 16. And as we said, one of them was the one that's based in Youngstown. Represented by a Democrat in Congress, Tim Ryan, and the other was the 6th Congressional District, which runs from southern Ohio through southeast Ohio all the way up, you know, north into eastern Ohio. And it's known as sort of Ted Strickland country. And it went for Donald Trump.
Is it fair to characterize that as a more blue-collar area?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's an area of chronic unemployment. It's an area where the economy has always struggled and lagged behind.
A lot of old industry out there.
Much of the rest of the state. Yeah, you know, I mean, there were the coal industry went away. And, you know, it's a hard scrabble part of the country or the state. And it went for Donald Trump. And I was not surprised by that a bit. I mean, I thought that was certainly going to happen. Where he did very well was in the suburban areas, John Kasich, that is, of the major metropolitan areas. He won over those votes. Those were his natural constituents, suburban voters.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation. So, Karen, what do you think that John Kasich did right? What did he have going for him that you saw that enabled him to beat Donald Trump? Because Marco Rubio didn't do so well in Florida.
No, that's true. And I think, you know, Kasich does ride a little bit of a wave of popularity. I mean, it's unfair to say blanketly mm-hmm. that he was a popular governor and won re-election overwhelmingly in 2014. I mean, he ran against a very weak candidate on the Democratic side. But Kasich's approval rating has been pretty good. I mean, when you look at the Quinnipiac poll that was released last week, you know, it showed that he has very favorable ratings, especially against the other candidates, it seems. And so I think that really did help him in Ohio. And, you know, there are these anecdotal stories about Democrats switching parties and pulling Republican tickets to vote for Kasich because they were so afraid of the threat of Donald Trump and they really didn't want Donald Trump to be the nominee. I think we really need to wait to see what the final results are to see how true that was. But certainly those stories were out there.
Yeah, those stories were out there. I think it was a little bit of a factor, but I don't think it was the major factor.
No.
Obviously, John Kasich has a great appeal to the mainstream Republican voter, who is basically a suburban voter in Ohio. And I saw that, you know, personally in Sharonville at the pancake breakfast Saturday morning. That was his crowd. They were all from the more affluent suburbs of Cincinnati, and they had voted for him for governor. They had voted for Rob Portman. They had voted for Mike DeWine. They had voted for, you know, John Husted, and they were going to vote for him again.
Howard, have you ever heard anybody, though, complain about John Kasich? He's got that kind of gee whiz, aw shucks demeanor. I mean, are people concerned about how that's going to play out in the debates against, say, Hillary Clinton?
Well, you know, candidates tend to change their approach, you know, as needed. I mean, you know, what we're hearing now out of John Kasich as a candidate for the nomination may change entirely should he win that nomination and go up against Hillary Clinton. It would be a whole different kind of message, I think.
Well, and I got to tell you, those of us who've covered John Kasich for his entire campaign for governor the first time and his years as governor here, he can be as aggressive as he wants to be. I mean, certainly he's projecting this party unifier. I embrace everybody. I'm friendly during town hall meetings. But he's got an edge to him, and that could definitely come out.
So he can be pretty snippy.
He's sandbagging with the RG shucks.
I don't know about you, Karen, but I've been on the receiving end of that a few times.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. We will continue our conversation about yesterday's primary results, and you can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk@wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney, and my guest this afternoon, Ohio Public Radio and Television Statehouse News Bureau Chief Karen Kassler and WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson. As we discuss yesterday's primary results, you can join us 513-419-7100, email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Howard, what was turnout like yesterday? Do we have any numbers on that?
Karen, I believe it was about 42% statewide. Does that sound right?
Yeah, turnout, you know, the Secretary of State's very hard to pin down on turnout because he doesn't like to project anything. But he did say that this was not a record turnout for a primary even, which kind of surprised me.
But it was a second,
because
it was number two, I think.
Well, it felt like a general election. I thought for sure we were getting into record territory here, but he said it was not a record.
I think the record, I believe, was in 2008 when it was about 46% who came out in the primary. And in that year, it was the Democratic primary between Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton that was driving the turnout. Now, of course, this year, the turnout was being driven by the Republican race. And the Republican turnout was very much higher than it was on the Democratic side. I think it was about 60-40.
Yes. Yes. And you know, I mean, 2008 was a historic year. I mean, even when you look at the results of the general election, it was a historic voter turnout.
Absolutely.
This is definitely a historic year, but, you know, it was a different kind of historic year, so to speak,
right.
I guess.
Sure. We got an email from somebody who was saying that Steve Chabot said in the Inquirer that Kasich would be Trump's vice president. On that ticket, I wonder what your thoughts are on that, Howard.
Yeah, I know. I saw what Steve Chabot said. He put it in his blog. My thoughts on that, I wouldn't hold my breath, Steve. Don't hold your breath, because I really don't see that happening.
I'm with you, Howard. I believe that, too.
And you know, Karen, John Kasich, I mean, as far as being vice president, he doesn't much like that idea in the first place.
Yeah, he said several times that's not what
he doesn't want to be number two, and
well,
he certainly doesn't want to be number two to Donald Trump, whom he just got done eviscerating on Saturday, you know, for creating a toxic atmosphere
in his
campaign.
You know, none of these folks, anybody who wants to be president doesn't want to be vice president.
No.
I mean, they just don't want to do that. And arguably, that's one of the reasons why we had 17 people who were all in this race for the presidency last year. And now we're down to three. But I think with Kasich and Trump, though, you've got two very, very different styles, very different approaches. And I just don't know that they would work well together, even if Donald Trump were interested and Kasich were interested. I wonder what kind of working relationship they would have.
Well, two different personalities, but two people who definitely are the folks who are they like to be in charge. I mean,
that would be.
Yep.
I couldn't even imagine. I mean, you know, the two of them getting their message straight, you know, getting both of them on the same page,
or knowing who's really the boss in that case.
Well, right? but getting the two of them on the same page on the issues, I don't think so.
Right. Now, you brought up the toxic environment, the poisoning of the campaign, Karen. You know, Kasich has said he's going to keep taking that high road to the highest office. Is that going to be possible, though, when you're running against a candidate like Donald Trump who just relishes a nasty fight?
Well, I mean, you do have the possibility that the Stop Trump movement will really get going, and you might have super PACs. You know, Jeb Bush has certainly said that he's been having meetings with John Kasich and also Marco Rubio. That there's certainly the idea that he wants to see Trump stopped. Maybe he might, and his super PAC might get involved here. You know, I think Kasich wouldn't necessarily have to be the guy that holds the bat, you know, in terms of negative campaigning, but I think there's going to have to be some negative campaigning because certainly Donald Trump is going to continue to do what he does.
Yeah.
And if indeed Kasich wants to be the anti-Trump, he's going to have to point out what Trump is doing. And he did some ads in Ohio over the weekend that pointed it out, but also managed to bring in Kasich's positive qualities. These were ads from his super PAC, New Day for America. But, you know, there was a negative bent to him.
For candidates, the beauty of these super PACs and the independent expenditures and all this sort of thing is that they don't have to be the bad guys, okay? They don't have to be the one delivering the mean, the hard message.
Yep.
Somebody else can do it for them. And that's what, you know, that's one thing that could end up hurting Donald Trump if, as Karen says, you know, the Bush super PAC and other super PACs start getting involved in an anti-Trump campaign.
I heard one pundit yesterday, Howard, talk about Kasich as being a kingmaker because of last night's victory. And I
think that's a little early to be crowning him as a kingmaker or a king.
Yeah.
You know, it's possible. I mean, it's a possibility, but it's far too early.
Well, at this point, he's got, 138 candidates?
Yeah, and it's like I said, I mean, you got of the delegates that are out there, you know, about 1,000 delegates out there, even if he won every last single one of them, he'd still be short.
And he actually does have to win, too.
Right.
Let's not forget that this is Kasich's first win.
Right.
And so for him to go forward and win, I mean, next week is going to be rough. He's got Arizona, which is a winner-take-all state. Donald Trump has been endorsed by the governor and also Sheriff Joe Arpaio, who's a very popular figure out there. That's a winner-take-all state with 58 delegates. You've got Utah, where Kasich is campaigning, but certainly there's a lot of religious conservatives there. He's got a lot of ground to cover in the next 6 or 8 great weeks going forward.
I mean, if he could have somehow yesterday won Ohio and maybe won
one other state,
then you know you'd have something to build upon. But you know he didn't do that, and he didn't actually do that well at all in Illinois, despite the amount of money that they spent there and the time that he spent there.
Well, he came in second in New Hampshire, Howard. So I'm wondering, you know, how do you think he's going to do in those remaining primaries in the Northeast? And then there's a state like Pennsylvania as well that's still up for grabs.
Well, whether it's the Northeast or the Southeast or the Southwest, you know, you just cannot underestimate.
He's got a long road ahead
Trump,
of him.
Appeal to a lot of Republican primary voters who are just angry at the establishment. They're angry at the Republican Party. They're angry at Washington. Certainly angry at the Obama administration, and. You know, you can't underestimate them. I mean, it's going to be a tough, tough row to hoe for John Kasich or anybody else to stop Donald Trump.
And also, Ted Cruz, let's not forget him this, because he certainly has raised a lot of money.
Sure.
He has strong support in several different areas. And so, you know, he's not exactly going to just go away.
And he's going to start moving, I think, a little bit, you know, more towards the center. You know, in order to make himself be a little bit more acceptable to some of the mainstream Republicans. I think you're going to see that over the next few weeks.
Yep.
513-419-7100. If you'd like to join us, you can also email talk@wvxu.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Let's talk with Sabrina in Glendale. Hi, Sabrina.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to make a comment that I think that there was a good number of Democrats that crossed over to vote for Kasich as an against Trump vote. And I think that that needs to be talked about as well.
Well, and I actually asked Secretary of State John Houston about that. He downplayed it a little bit, but really we don't know because, you know, we haven't seen the numbers yet. There's certainly a lot of anecdotal stories out there. There was a lot of activity on social media about this, people talking about not only that they were doing it, but they were encouraging their friends to do it. But the real proof, I think, comes down in the numbers. And I'll be very interested to see, because when you are a Democrat and you pull a Republican ballot, your registration now shifts. And so I'll be very interested to see how many Democratic voters were lost, how many Republican voters were gained. That could give us an indication of just how widespread this was.
And I kind of thought, you know, that some of this would happen, but that it would be mostly Hillary Clinton type Democrats who would cross over. And I'm not sure they did, just based on the fact that Hillary won so convincingly in Ohio yesterday.
Well, and I think that may have been Howard, because I've already lost my brain here. Bernie Sanders was really launching a challenge here in Ohio. When he won Michigan, I think it really put a lot of concern in the minds of Hillary Clinton voters who had not voted that they had to get out and vote for her. Maybe they were thinking about doing what you were talking about doing, Howard.
Right.
But
and
maybe
didn't do it.
Yeah, they didn't do it because of fear that what if Bernie Sanders wins?
Sure.
513-419-7100 to join the conversation. And Paul in Reading joins us now. Hi, Paul.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. My question is simple. I was just concerned about the timing of choosing a VP running mate. And does that coincide typically at the timing of the convention? And if it does or does not, how does that better somebody's chances of running against Trump as a team versus an individual?
That's a really interesting question.
That's a good question.
I've wondered why. I don't think we've ever had a candidate who has not secured the nomination announce a running mate, have we, Howard?
I can't remember one. No, I mean, you know, it certainly happened well before the conventions convened, but not before, you know, somebody had actually nailed down the enough delegates to be the nominee.
It's apparent. It's
and sometimes they do it like on the first or second day of the convention. Sometimes they do it before the convention starts. But, you know.
It's potentially risky, though, because if you name somebody who, I mean, I know nobody votes for vice president, but if you name somebody who is divisive or maybe isn't all that popular, right, even though you thought that person was, then this could be a setback. And so, you know, I don't see anybody coming out with their choice of vice president until we actually get closer to the convention. If not, I mean, if we go into a brokered convention, who knows when we would hear who the vice presidential candidate right would be.
Yeah, then it would be that would be the final thing that that would come out of that convention. But you're absolutely right. I mean, it could easily backfire on you if you do it too early.
Let's talk with Nelson and Clifton. Hi, Nelson.
Hi. First of all, I'm a lifelong Democrat. I worked extensively on the Kennedy campaign here in Hamilton County, and all the way up till the present, I'm on the podium with the president, with the candidate 2 days before electing Barack Obama. And, of course, I'm extremely disappointed that our local alternative radio station sees fit to hire the predictable views of Howard Wilkins.
Oh, no.
Cincinnati Enquirer.
Nelson.
You couldn't find someone who would.
Thanks, Nelson. 513-419-7100 if you would like to join the conversation.
Yeah. I don't know. All I know is I haven't worked there for 4 years, so I don't.
Let's talk with Kathleen in Dayton. Good afternoon, Kathleen.
Hi, good afternoon. Hey, I'm a Sanders supporter, but I'm appalled. I go back and forth from Colorado taking care of grandkids to here taking care of an 87-year-old mother, and I am shocked that voters here in Ohio, Dem voters, could just sweep Hillary Clinton's war record with Iraq and as Secretary of State, Libya, pushing for that military intervention, and then with Syria, pushing for supplying rebels that we weren't quite sure who they were with arms. And so the mainstream media, both right, left, and center, basically has let her skate on these, I believe, to be horrific and verifiable issues. So do you think Kasich and Trump will start to target her on those issues since the so-called liberal media won't even talk about that record? And as well as, do you think Kasich will start to be challenged on his SB5, his record for going after collective bargaining with public employees here in Ohio?
Okay, Kathleen.
I'll say I'll join in on the last one there. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. I think Democrats in Ohio have certainly not forgotten Senate Bill 5, and he hasn't gotten a lot of attention. Kasich hasn't nationally up until this point, some attention, but not a lot. But certainly, as his profile rises, you're going to see Democrats bring that up and mention that. Oh, you think he's so moderate and he's so unifying? Well, look what happened here. So I think absolutely they're going to pick on that.
Yeah, and it was interesting over the weekend when Trump was in Ohio. I know he did this in Westchester, and I think he did it elsewhere. He went after Kasich on SB5, you know, saying, hey, this is a man, you know, is attacking firefighters and police officers and our first responders and blah, 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 and was using it as a campaign weapon against him in a Republican primary.
Absolutely. With regard to the other question about Hillary Clinton, I mean, certainly you're going to see more attacks on Hillary Clinton and on her record. I mean, that we're starting to pivot toward the general election, there's certainly going to be questions raised. I mean, right now it's been focused on emails for the most part, it seems like. But, you know, there's going to be more attention paid to her if she is indeed the candidate. Then the Republicans are definitely going to be focusing on her and her whole record.
You're right about that, Karen. I think as you get closer to the general election, these things will come more and more under scrutiny for both the Republican candidate and the Democratic candidate, however that works out.
Yeah, and they just had to wait until it became clear that Hillary Clinton was indeed going to be the nominee, and I think that's, you know, we're just about at that point.
513-419-7100 to join us, and Bill in Camp Denison joins us right now. Hi, Bill.
Good afternoon. Actually, I'm on 71 North of Columbus, but I'm from Camp Denison. I have a question, statement first, if I may. My wife and I were anguishing about who to vote for and what our ploy would be to add our 2 cents worth. She's a lifelong Democrat. I'm a lifelong Republican, but I have been exasperated with the Republican Party, as many others have, for a number of years, and I voted Democratic for the last two national elections. I voted Republican yesterday to support Governor Kasich. She voted Democratic as usual, but for Bernie, because she is wary of professional.
You did the same thing my son and his spouse did in Michigan.
Yeah, well, and I actually heard stories about people doing it here in Ohio. Exactly.
Sure. Yeah. We're wringing our hands at this point, but nonetheless, my question is simple. Was it winner take all for the Democratic ticket?
No.
And it won't be anywhere.
Right.
Anywhere.
Only the GOP side.
They don't do that. Democrats, it's all proportional based on congressional district and the statewide vote.
Well, I've been on the run today. I haven't had a chance to check. What was the division on the Democratic side for Hillary and for Bernie?
Let me look at that. I've got that number right in front of me here. According to the New York Times, it's interesting with delegate math that the numbers change. I don't understand how that is, but whatever. Right now, the New York Times records Hillary Clinton is getting 76 delegates yesterday and Bernie Sanders getting 57 in Ohio.
That sounds about right.
And Bill, thanks so much for the phone call. We appreciate it. We'll continue our conversation with Karen Kassler from Ohio Public Radio and WVXU's Howard Wilkinson. You can join us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney, along with Ohio Public Radio's Karen Kassler and WVXU's Howard Wilkinson. As we look at yesterday's primary results, you can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Let's talk with Chloe in Wyoming. Good afternoon, Chloe.
Hi. I just had a few questions. I've been hearing a lot about the superdelegates. I'm a Bernie Sanders supporter, but I've been hearing how the superdelegates are, it's being guessed in the media where they're going to pledge their support, and some of the national polls just throw their support at Hillary Clinton. I'm wondering what it would take for those superdelegates to change their vote and whether they're allowed to vote for Bernie Sanders, and that might turn the tide in this whole idea. Also, looking if they might change, seeing that Bernie Sanders is polling to be able to beat Donald Trump better than Hillary Clinton. So I was just wondering how that goes.
Howard and Karen, what's your take on that? Howard?
Well, I mean, the unpledged superdelegates are pretty much free to do what they want. And, you know, I think that's, they tend to be the party leadership, you know, types, establishment types.
Right. And I think, you know, if indeed momentum shifted, certainly things could change.
It could change. But
the Democrats put the superdelegates in place, as I understand it, to try to avoid situations like what we're seeing on the Republican side.
Right.
And, you know, to try to get where you don't have a candidate who is somebody that seems to be really odious to a large percentage of the party leadership to become the candidate of choice. So
right.
I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how that would happen. But I don't think there would be any change, really, because Hillary Clinton looks like, I mean, winning five states yesterday really pushed her well onto the track to winning the nomination.
I mean, if the Republicans had such a thing as superdelegates, it might be a little easier to untrack a Donald Trump.
But yesterday, Hillary Clinton, she won Ohio, she won Florida, she won Illinois, North Carolina. I think last I heard, Missouri had not been called yet, that it was still too close.
She was apparently the winner there as well, but that was really close.
Close, very close.
Yeah, but in terms of her delegate count, at least as far as the media is counting it, I mean, that gave her quite an advantage yesterday.
Yeah.
And I think she's either half close to halfway or halfway there,
right,
to the delegate count. But, you know, Bernie Sanders, certainly his volunteers are very energetic. They're not ready to give up. I think he really, his supporters really feel like that they can maybe at least influence what the party will do and put their voices in this whole campaign. So I don't expect Bernie's going to go away.
No.
513-419-7100 to join the conversation. Let's talk with Chris in Hyde Park. Good afternoon, Chris.
Yeah, good afternoon. Thanks for having me. I just wanted to quickly call in and just say that I am one of the Democrats who took a Republican ballot in the primaries to vote for Kasich. You know, I know of many friends who did that. I'm a staunch Democrat. But, you know, with our votes being so important, especially here in Ohio, you know, I know which party I'm going to vote for in the end. And this not being a partisan election, you know, I felt it much more important to use my vote to at least prolong Trump from, you know, sealing the deal, if you will.
Yeah. Well,
yeah, and I actually talked to a couple of voters yesterday. I heard from some great voters, talked to some voters outside polling places here in Columbus. And I did talk to some people who said they did exactly that. And so I really believe these stories. I'm just not sure how widespread it was.
I'm sorry Chris is gone, because I wanted to ask him, just if he had not done that, which Democrat he would have supported.
Mm.
And, you know, we hear more and more. This we had a listener email, and she said that she and her husband did the same thing. They're Democrats, but they voted GOP to stop Trump. So, Karen, it sounds like the anecdotal list is growing and growing.
Going on there.
Yeah.
But it really is too early to tell. But we'll get a handle on it.
513-419-7100 to join the conversation, and let's talk with Robert in Fairfield. Hi, Robert.
Yeah, another Bernie Sanders supporter, and I was sort of demoralized by the outcome. Although he is winning delegates and still getting strong support, I'm wondering what your guests think about what will happen to the western states, because he did win Oregon. I think a more progressive states being out west and to the north. There's California. I know that's late in the game, and I have no illusions that he's not going to be the nominee for the Democrats, but the pressure could be there if Sanders does well in those western states. Can they make a prediction about that? And my second question is, if Clinton is president at some point, will she shift to the center to try to be reelected, or will she start the demographic change that she's going to start trying to be more progressive agenda and appeal more to minorities?
Ooh, good question.
Yeah. Well, I tend to think that she will, you know, run a center-left campaign. I mean, not, you know, she's going to have the black vote. She's probably going to have the Latino vote locked up. She's going to have certainly strong support from women voters. So I don't know that she has to move a great deal.
Yeah, it seemed like in her speech last night, she was already kind of headed in that direction,
right,
toward the center. So,
well, yeah, center left. I mean, center, you know.
Right. Center left, center right, whatever. Correct.
Yeah.
Okay. 513-419. I was confusing things there. 513-419-7100 to join us. And Cody and Mason, hi.
Hi. Thanks for having me on. I had just mostly a comment. My wife and I are both millennials. I'm a lifelong Democrat, and she's been a lifelong Republican. I voted for Hillary, but she actually switched her vote to Bernie because she would rather see Bernie on the ticket than either Trump or Hillary. So that just sounded a bit different than anything I've been heard before.
I think,
not,
you know,
we're
it's
all crazy.
No, and I think that the rise of Bernie Sanders has been really interesting.
Oh, yeah.
Because I think a lot of people kind of dismissed him at the beginning, thinking, oh, what's this guy doing? But what's this guy doing? He's getting a lot of people engaged and involved, people who are younger voters. I mean, certainly the 17-year-old voters here in Ohio, people who have – I talked to a gentleman yesterday who said he's never voted for a major party candidate in a presidential contest. This man's 35 years old and has never voted for a major party candidate. He voted for Bernie Sanders because he felt like Bernie Sanders was not, you know, owned in a sense by corporate donors. And I thought that was a really interesting thing. Somebody who really crossed all the way over in a sense.
Yeah. You know, this is just anecdotal, but I work with some high school students at Walnut Hills High School here, journalism students. And you cannot imagine how excited the 17-year-olds were
to find out that they could actually vote in yesterday's primary. And they were, every last single one of them that I talked to was a Bernie Sanders supporter.
Yeah.
Sure.
You talk about a really confusing situation, that the whole thing around 17-year-olds voting.
But, and they were confused right up till the last minute. But then when they found out that, oh, yeah, we can vote, they were excited. And, well, and they did vote.
And I got to say, I thought it was extraordinary to find out that for many years, I mean, I've heard stories about people saying, oh, I was 17 and I voted for so-and-so back in the 90s or whatever. Yeah. But to find out that those votes weren't counted, I thought was really amazing.
I was really surprised by that, too.
Akeem in Northside joins us now. Good afternoon.
Yes, good thing for having me. I just got one question. Since Governor Kasich didn't have enough signatures to be in a ballot in Pennsylvania, and the Rubio campaign maybe filed a complaint, like legal brief, about the situation, what will we do about his nomination? I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you for having me again.
Thank you. So the issue over whether he's even eligible to run in Pennsylvania.
I don't know. This was a complaint filed by the Rubio campaign.
Right.
I asked Governor Kasich about that when I talked to him on the phone last Friday, right before he did that event in Moraine. And he said it's not valid. He was confident that he would win it. And now that Rubio's out of the race, I'm not even sure the complaint will go forward.
Right.
These are the kind of things, though, that happen in campaigns where one campaign will accuse another campaign of some sort of malfeasance. And these are the kind of things that happen.
I don't think there's any question he'll be on about in Pennsylvania. He's already doing a lot of campaign stuff on the ground there. I saw a flyer today on Twitter that being distributed in Pennsylvania talking about John Kasich's roots in Pennsylvania, which is where he was born and grew up.
Yep. And he had apparently a good-sized rally there today in Villanova, mm-hmm. I think.
Right.
He was.
Oh, yeah,
there.
That's right. Yeah.
We have to talk about the rugby scrum, too, Howard. I think what we're discussing yesterday's primary, I mean, you had one candidate emerge from that whole thing. I love that you called that a rugby scrum. 15 candidates running to replace John Boehner in Ohio's 8th district.
8th congressional district.
That was extraordinary.
It was extraordinary. And, 15 of them came out. They were all, every last one of them, there were 14 men and one woman. But every last one of them ran a campaign as a Washington outsider, and they were, running for the seat of the ultimate Washington insider, who had been forced out, by the House Freedom Caucus. And in the end, Warren Davidson, who had never, the only elected office that he has had is Concord Township trustee in Miami County. He's a businessman. He has a very impressive military record, but he was totally unknown until the Club for Growth and Freedom Works, conservative organizations that have a very big impact on national politics, started pouring enormous amounts of money into his campaign, and he suddenly became the favorite. I saw a thing on Center for Responsive Politics, opensecrets.org, did an analysis. There was more money spent, outside money spent in this campaign, $2.5 million, than any House race in the country. Mm. And Davidson accounted for most of that. And he ended up winning the primary against a state senator, Bill Beagle, from Tipp City in Miami County, a state representative from Butler County, Tim Derrickson, who was considered sort of the establishment-type favorite, and it wasn't particularly close.
And there were actually, there were two votes in this case.
Yes,
right?
You had to vote twice. As a Republican voter, you had to vote twice. You voted once for the candidate for the June 7th special general election, which is to fill out the remainder of Boehner's term, which ends like January 3rd of next year. Then you had to vote again for the November election, the nominee for the November election for a full 2-year term. Well, Davidson won both of them. The numbers were almost exactly the same. People, went in and voted twice for the same candidates for the most part.
So Davidson, this is a heavily, heavily Republican district. You know, he's going to be running against a Green Party candidate and a 25-year-old Democrat from Westchester. And, you know, it's he's obviously the favorite because he's going to have extraordinary amounts of money.
But isn't he the insider now? Isn't he the insider?
He's the insider now. Yeah. And he's going to be the insider.
Can that be used against him? I mean.
But, you know, these people act like, you know, I mean, they were acting like, you know, if you had taken a sightseeing trip in Washington, D.C., suddenly you were a Beltway, you know, inside the Beltway insider.
That would disqualify a lot of us.
Right.
We had Ted Strickland beating P.G. Sittenfeld in the Democratic primary for the U.S. Senate yesterday. And then incumbent Rob Portman won on the Republican side. What do you, Karen, what do you expect from this race?
I expect a lot of money. I expect a lot of attention, especially if Donald Trump is the nominee, mm-hmm. because that puts the Republican Party in a really unique position. Again, like I was saying earlier, you've got Republican office holders who say they don't want to campaign for Trump. They refuse to support him. Well, how do you campaign for an incumbent Republican senator when the top of the ticket is a candidate that you don't like? I mean, the Republican Party as a unified party might have a little bit of trouble with that. And that, of course, opens the door for Democrats to pour a lot of money into this race, like they need an excuse to do that, yep. because this is a seat that Democrats really want to win and want to put money into. So I think there's going to be a lot of money. Rob Portman has way outraised the Democratic candidates at this point, and he's going to continue to. However, Ted Strickland says he admits he's going to have a lot less money than Portman, but says he's not going to need it. So it'll be an interesting race.
Yeah, and you know the last thing I think Rob Portman wants, you know, in his heart of hearts is to have to run underneath Donald Trump on the ballot in November. That's the last thing he wants. The money part of it, you're right. He's going to have a whole lot more money than Ted Strickland, both that he raises and that independent expenditures on his behalf and attacking Strickland. But, you know the history of Senate campaigns in Ohio, it doesn't always mean that the person with the most money wins.
That's exactly right. In 2012, there was more money spent on behalf and with Josh Mandel and Sherrod Brown won.
Right. And Sherrod Brown originally won that seat spending less money than Mike DeWine.
Yes.
Portman's come out swinging already, hasn't he, Howard? Portman's already come out, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he started off, you know, this morning, you know, with a brand new retread Ted campaign, you know.
Does he have to be careful, though? I mean, with that, I mean, does he have to be careful not to underestimate Ted Strickland?
Well, yeah, you can't underestimate him. No, I mean, that's, you know, especially if Hillary Clinton is the nominee and turns out to be fairly popular among Ohio voters, could help drag, you know, Ted Strickland into office.
So what's next for P.G. Sittenfeld, Howard?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, P.G., obviously the Democratic Party establishment in Ohio wasn't real happy with him challenging Ted Strickland in this race. I don't know that he's completely burned his bridges. They look at him and say, you know, I mean, this is a 31-year-old city councilman who's done pretty well for himself. Obviously a good vote getter down here. Seems to me to still have potential as a statewide candidate in the future. So, you know, and he's going to run for something. He may, you know, I mean, we have a mayoral race in 2017 in Cincinnati. I'm not saying he's going to get into it, but it's a possibility for him.
And I don't think the Democratic Party can really afford to look away from him because
they can't. They really can't.
Yeah, I mean, they've got five offices coming up in 2018 where Republicans are jockeying
candidates
around to see who's going to run for governor and attorney general and everything. And certainly P.G. Sittenfeld could slide into one of those as a Democratic candidate.
They have to look at him as the future.
Yep.
Karen, Howard, thank you.
Great to be here.
Ohio Public Radio and Television State House News Bureau Chief Karen Kassler and WVXU political reporter Howard Wilkinson.